This is George Herman for CBS News in Washington. The funeral train bearing the body of Senator Robert F. Kennedy is nearing Union Terminal here in Washington. It's a dark, gloomy night, rain clouds over parts of the city. The train should be in any moment now. We'll be hearing from correspondents on the scene. At the Union Terminal, the casket will be unloaded from the train, and the cortege will start its route down along First Street Northwest, passing and halting briefly at the Senate office building where Senator Robert Kennedy worked and lived so hard during these past 4 or 5 years. Then along Constitution Avenue, the purpose there to halt briefly by the Justice Department where he served as first an attorney in the criminal division in 1951 and 1952, and then, of course, as attorney general for his brother, President John F. Kennedy, from 1961 to 1964. Then on along Constitution Avenue, past the Internal Revenue Building, the Interstate Commerce Commission, the Labor Department, the Commerce Department, and then finally south of the White House, past the Ellipse, on still further past the Pan American Union, the National Science Foundation, and then a left turn onto Henry Bacon Drive and a swing onto the Lincoln Memorial. And there the funeral cortege will turn in the improper direction, according to traffic regulations. Ordinarily, traffic goes around the Lincoln Memorial in a counterclockwise fashion. Today, tonight, the cortege will go in clockwise fashion, passing first in front of the face of the statue of Abraham Lincoln, between Lincoln and the reflecting pool, the Washington Monument, and behind it, in one of the most beautiful vistas of Washington, the capital of the United States. And it is expected to halt or slow down, perhaps stop altogether, right about at that point, so that the people of Resurrection City, the campgrounds of the Poor People's March in Washington, will have a chance to view, perhaps to sing. Then on, across Memorial Bridge, a bridge of deep significance in Washington, a bridge built finally in 1932, which connects symbolically the Lincoln Memorial with the Lee Mansion, Abraham Lincoln and Robert E. Lee, a bridge connecting the federal city with the headquarters of the Old South, with Virginia. And then on, swinging around up into Arlington Cemetery to the grave of President John Kennedy, and there, of course, the final interment of the body of Senator Robert F. Kennedy. Let's check first now with our correspondent at Union Station. Let's see what CBS News correspondent Steve Rowan can tell us of the state of affairs there. Steve?
The train is not here yet. The train has not arrived, but we understand that President and Mrs. Johnson are here to meet the funeral train when it comes in any minute now. The President and Mrs. Johnson in a limousine, White House limousine, arrived a few moments ago. The limousine was backed into an alcove in this grand concourse, this 760-foot-long, 130-foot-wide concourse, which serves the tracks here at Union Station. They have not emerged from that limousine. But now we are catching the first glimpse of light reflected along the shining rails. And we would estimate that the train is about a mile or a mile and a half from here. These rails glistening in this rain that has started falling within the last half hour. The light reflected along like two twin beacons. The rails bending up somewhat as they go out of this Union Station area and head from here to the northeast. Everything is in readiness, in addition to President and Mrs. Johnson. Mayor Walter Washington and his wife are here. The mayor of Washington has been here for the better part of 2 hours now, standing in a charcoal gray suit, his hands now folded behind his back, his wife in a black dress, a white hat, white shoes, and white gloves, waiting at the foot of track 16. It's on this track that the first cars of the train will be spotted. Actually, most of the cars, all but three cars of the 22-car train, will stop here on track 16. And from them will alight the 1,000 or so mourners who have accompanied the body down from New York.
Steve, in the few moments we have left, perhaps before the train comes in, let me just switch along the line and see what is happening at the other points. Let's check at the Justice Department and ask CBS reporter Mariah McLaughlin what the situation is there. Mariah?
The crowd started gathering here, George, about 2:30, and it was not a very large crowd for the next 3 or 4 hours. People sat quietly on the grass and ate their lunch, and they were quiet, but they didn't seem to be sad. They just sort of sat in the hot sun. And then about an hour ago, the big crowd started to arrive. Obviously, people had been listening to their radios or televisions, and they knew the train was late. Now it's about 4 or 5 deep on either side of the street, as far as I can see down the avenue. There was a heavy rain just a few moments ago, so those that waited patiently through the hot sun got a little cooling off just a few moments ago. The way we understand it, the motorcade will stop here in front of the Justice Department, and the members of the people who work here in the Justice Department who have been watching on television in an auditorium, about 500 of them, will come out on the front steps with Attorney General Ramsey Clark, and the motorcade will stop long enough for the Attorney General to join the motorcade, to get in a car. That may be changed because of the lateness, but that was the plan. Earlier in the day, in a small court in the center of the Justice Department, there was a little ceremony in memory of Robert Kennedy, presided over by the Attorney General. And it was a very touching ceremony. There were not a great many people there, but it was very simple, and the Attorney General spoke very poignantly of Robert Kennedy, called him Bob all the time, said that we should remember him because he was so full of life, and that's the way we should remember him in death.
Very good. Mariah, I think we have to switch back to the station now. I believe the train is now coming in. Steve Rowan, please.
The train is within a couple of hundred yards at the end of track 16 now. We can hear its bell, its bright headlight shining as it pulls slowly in on this final train journey for Robert F. Kennedy. A long, slow journey it has been. The train now all but 10 minutes, all but 10 minutes short of being 5 hours overdue here in Washington. The crowd here in the concourse has been swelled by a few people who have managed to get through police lines, some of them obviously station workers, many of them, almost all of them, Negroes. And indeed, the crowd around the station, outside the station, on the grass today, the crowd that started forming some 7 hours ago, was largely Negro.
Steve, the train was supposed to split into two parts. Has it, in fact, divided and is one part in, do you know?
Well, we are able to see along track 16, and so far as we can tell, there is nothing yet on track 17. Now we're looking on track 17. Nothing has started moving down it yet. My understanding is that the train was to stop here on track 16, and then a switch engine was to come up in the rear of the train and take those final cars off and switch them over to track 17. People have started disembarking from this train now on track 16. One of the very old platforms here in this 61-year-old building, lighted by a few very weak 100-watt bulbs. And on this platform, they have to climb down the stairs, the train stairs. Platform 17 has been modernized, and people will be able to step directly off. Now, first comes the press, of course, the reporters who have been traveling, first of all, with the Kennedy campaign, and now through this long, dreary week with the Kennedy death and the Kennedy funeral. The reporters first, off the first couple of cars of this train, heading out to press buses that will take them directly to Arlington National Cemetery. Some 45 buses are waiting outside, along with some 40 limousines, to carry this crowd out to Arlington. A crowd, as I say, of about 1,000, roughly half the people who were in St. Patrick's Cathedral this morning for the funeral mass.
Steve, now, let's pause here for just a moment. I'd like to switch out to Bruce Morton at Arlington and ask him what the weather is like, what the situation is like at Arlington. Is it going to be a rainy burial?
I don't think we can really answer that yet, George. It hasn't rained here yet. It's poured in some sections of Washington, and standing where I am on the hill slope that rises behind the grave of President John Kennedy, I've been able to see the clouds moving across the city of Washington, but all we've had here are a few sprinkling drops. It's an eerie scene, almost. The clouds, the television lights picking out a few points, the eternal flame glowing brightly now that it's dark here at Arlington. And from this hillside, we look across the Potomac, of course, to the skyline of Washington, the Capitol, the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial. The crowds are still here. The few drops of rain haven't bothered them at all, although it's almost impossible to see them now. They're hidden by trees, they're obscured by darkness. And we see all the long, distorted shadows that artificial lights bring to a place like this, across the rows of gravestones, the trees, the grass. But so far, the weather here has not been bad. The thunderstorms have passed by this place.
Very well. Thank you, Bruce. Now, one interesting thing, although it comes at a very late moment, the people of Senator Kennedy's headquarters have called CBS Radio News and suggested that those along the line of march here in Washington, D.C., anybody who has a transistor radio within sound of my voice, that as the funeral cortege goes past, they may want to light a match or a cigarette lighter, perhaps a reference to President John F. Kennedy's frequently used quotation that it is better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. In any case, we relay to you this request from Senator Kennedy's office that for respect, as a sign of respect, you may want to light matches as the funeral cortege goes by here in Washington. Steve Rowan, people still coming off that train, I presume?
Yes, quite a crowd coming now. Still a great many reporters, photographers. Our own Harry Reasoner walking past at the moment, along with many others we recognize from the Washington Press Corps and the New York Press Corps. And mixed with them, some of the people who, for one reason or another, were invited guests today at St. Patrick's Cathedral on this train and for the final interment service at Arlington National Cemetery.
Steve, would you judge that we have time to switch for a moment to Hal Walker at the Lincoln Memorial, or is it getting pretty close to time?
No, I think indeed we do. There is still no sign of the other cars on track 17, so
Well. That
might be a fine idea.
Thank you. At the Lincoln Memorial, at Resurrection City, at the Reflecting Pool, CBS News reporter Hal Walker. What's it like, Hal?
George, strangely enough, even though it isn't raining over at Arlington, here just about a mile or less away on the other side of the bridge, it is raining, not heavily, just a light shower. It seems to have taken the temperatures down quite a bit from the 83-degree high that the people who stood out here all afternoon experienced. A combined choir of about 250 voices is now singing softly in the rain and the rather strange shadows that Bruce mentioned that are being cast by the television lights. Off in the distance, the Washington Monument is reflected in the reflecting pool as we stand here atop the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Just beyond, the Capitol Dome glistens in a very dark night, a very midnight blue, even at this early stage of the evening. We would guess there are some between 4,000 and 5,000 people still standing out here, even though their ranks thinned out quite a bit in the afternoon heat. However, many of the people, as I look out now, I recognize faces that have been here, faces of people who have been here through the afternoon and have remained just for a quick glimpse now in the darkness as the senator's body and the procession passes. We understand that there will be at least a halt here as the choir sings and as the maybe 200 to 300 residents of Resurrection City are lined up across the street in order to pay their respects. One man has a sign that says, Resurrection City mourns Robert Kennedy. Another man has been holding a sign all afternoon with a picture of Martin Luther King on one side and on the other side saying, nonviolence must be respected. The mood here is somber and waiting. They've obviously heard that the train is in Washington and realize that it'll be turning into Henry Bacon Drive in a few minutes, and they'll get that very treasured last glimpse.
Thank you, Hal Walker. The train has been considerably delayed getting to Washington. It has had a number of mishaps along the way. I think perhaps it would be wise to review a little bit of what has delayed this funeral procession. With me here in the studio, CBS News correspondent Mark Nagronsky.
Well, George, what has delayed the train was tremendous outpouring of people all along the route that it followed, reminiscent of the time that the body of Franklin D. Roosevelt was brought here to Washington from Warm Springs, Georgia, moved at about the same pace, and reminiscent of the days when they brought the body of Lincoln here, too. People stopped the train's progress, really, all along the route that it followed, and there was the tragedy that seems the inevitable accompaniment always of the Kennedy family's public appearances, the Elizabeth, New Jersey. Two people were killed and six others injured by a train coming in the opposite direction when they were crowded onto the track in front of that train. And then at North Trenton, New Jersey, a youngster got up on top of a freight car, touched a high-powered electric cable and was badly burned and apparently is now in critical condition. These are the things that delayed the train, but basically, what really delayed the train was that people all along the way wanted to pay their respects to the body of Robert Kennedy and to the Kennedy family. There were scenes of grief all along in Philadelphia. The police were unable to control the crowds who were so determined that they would come out and show the Kennedys how deeply they felt about the tragedy that had befallen the family again 4.5 years after the assassination of the late president. And that's what delayed the train.
Thank you, Martin. I think now let us return to the scene of the current action. Let's go back to Union Station and CBS News correspondent Steve Rowan.
George, New York's other senator, Senator Jacob Javits, has just gone by our vantage point here at the foot of tracks 16 and 17, bringing to mind, of course, something that will be discussed in the weeks ahead, the identity of the person who will be named by Governor Nelson Rockefeller to replace Senator Robert Kennedy. This is a little like watching a crowd come out of a movie as we stand here searching the faces for some sign of the emotion that has tied these people together this long day since the funeral service began at 10 o'clock this morning. And I would say that their faces tell a story of tiredness. No one is crying. No one is particularly saddened at the moment. They are not somber in the usual sense of the word somber. They are looking around to some extent, blinking in the lights to some extent, but walking quietly, not in any way a noisy crowd, not the usual crowd emerging from a train, not talking to each other, just walking quietly down a corridor that has been made of ropes that will lead them to the buses and the limousines that will take them out to Union Station. Mayor John Lindsay now coming by with Ralph Abernathy, the mayor dressed in a charcoal gray suit, and the Reverend Mr. Abernathy dressed in a light blue sports shirt and blue Levi pants, carrying a blue Levi jacket. These are the people who spent this final couple of days with the friends and the family of Senator Robert Francis Kennedy, and they're here now for this final moment, the interment service at Arlington National Cemetery. Most of the crowd now has alighted from the train and has gone past our vantage point. And on track 17 to the right, we now can see the cars bearing the Kennedy family and that black mahogany coffin, which will be taken from this point to the cemetery in a black U.S. Army hearse. The cars are backing very slowly down track 17, I think waiting until the rest of this crowd from the cars on track 16 that has departed. Along track 17, which is there's an elevated platform, a relatively new platform, lighted by fluorescent lights instead of the weak little light bulbs that hang along the other platforms in this station. Along it, a red carpet has been unrolled, and the columns, the white columns that line this platform have been draped in black. On either side of the red carpet stand a ceremonial honor guard of soldiers in their black jackets and blue trousers, Marines in their black jackets and white trousers, sailors in their white dress uniforms, Coast Guardsmen in their white dress uniforms, and the Air Force ceremonial unit in its black dress uniforms. 53 men on either side of this carpet, 106 men here, and more outside, away from this concourse, out in the waiting room area, the area that will be passed by the family and the coffin. The Navy band now has lined up directly in front of us and will shortly be playing as the coffin is removed from the train and carried down that long, several hundred feet, perhaps 1,000 feet of carpet to this waiting hearse immediately to our right. As yet, no sign of President Johnson and Mrs. Johnson, who are reported to be here sitting in their car, parked in an alcove of this huge concourse, waiting for the Kennedy family to alight from the train. But Mayor Walter Washington, as we said before, was here with his wife, Orville Freeman, the Secretary of Labor, and a number of other lesser officials of the City of Washington and the federal government. The train now is emptied, those cars that carried the mourners. The other car is still being held back at the other end of the platform on track 17. This track into which so many funeral trains have come. In 1964, you may recall that former President Hoover came back to Washington on just such a train. And in that same year, earlier that same year, General of the Army Douglas MacArthur was brought to Washington on a funeral train from New York. In the case of General MacArthur, the body was met here by a caisson. President Hoover's case, it was a hearse, as it is today, that took the body down almost into downtown Washington, from whence a procession was started to the Capitol, where the body lay in state. Here there will be no lying in state, of course. The body will move quickly and fairly directly toward its last resting place in Arlington National Cemetery, next to the place in which the body of the late President John F. Kennedy now rests. The train now has started to move, these last three cars, and is coming toward us just a few hundred feet away now, passing the first of the ceremonial guard. Incidentally, these tracks were moved 2 inches yesterday so as to ensure that the cars would not scrape along the edge of this elevated platform as some cars have in the past. It would seem to be a fairly difficult task, but workmen got to work on it yesterday and in one day moved this long stretch of track just exactly 2 inches farther away from this platform. Now the clergy, the Washington clergy, are here waiting at the foot of this red carpet along which the body will be borne, along which the Kennedy family and their closest friends will walk. But still, at this moment, no sign of President and Mrs. Johnson. The clergy now coming over to the carpet as the train approaches us. The Navy band, as we say, is standing directly in front of us in its dress white uniforms. And as the body is being taken from the train, moved by members of the Kennedy family, and then carried by eight Navy body bearers down this long red carpet, the band will play. Washington is a city used to giving formal receptions to dignitaries. It's a city used to the pomp and circumstance of formal funeral services. And as it would seem, a fitting place for this, the final ceremony in which Senator Robert Francis Kennedy will be involved. It is in this city that he served, as so many have said, not having to serve, but wanting to serve, as an attorney, then as Attorney General when his brother was president, and into the days that followed that tragic assassination of 1963. And then as a senator from the state of New York. The last train ride is over. The train has stopped. Now stepping down from this car nearest us are a few of Senator Kennedy's closest aides. One wonders what they will do now. Because as it was with President John Kennedy, these men are more than just employees, trusted friends and confidants. They joked about the last train on which the senator rode, naming it after that word which so many people used to describe him, so many of those who were his political foes, calling it the Ruthless Express. But that was a campaign train, and this is a funeral train. And now the close friends, those who were privileged to ride in these three cars with the family, are leaving, dressed in black, heads covered with black lace in many cases. These the more somber. Sergeants wearing the green berets. The man who put his green beret on the last resting place of President John F. Kennedy, and three other veterans of Vietnam who knew the late senator and who went to New York flying all night last night to be there, or all night the night before last, we should say, to be there yesterday to stand vigil beside the coffin. Members of the family now, passing slowly, as the ceremonial honor guard presents arms. But no one passing down that red carpet, of course, passing to the rear of the ceremonial guard, for that red carpet is reserved for the
8 Navy body bearers will carry the black mahogany coffin toward the hearse that now stands with its rear door open now, its aluminum interior gleaming, waiting to receive the coffin that contains the remains of Senator Kennedy. Quite a large crowd of family and friends.
Steve, at this point, we understand President Johnson and Vice President Humphrey and Mrs. Johnson and their party have moved into position and are waiting. Perhaps you can see them in the other direction, but in any case, they are now, we understand, inside the terminal, in position and waiting.
My view is blocked of them, but I do now see the coffin. Senator Edward Kennedy, Robert Kennedy Jr. walk in front of it. And the Navy body bearer is not carrying it here. The pallbearer is carrying it as it moves toward the hearse, this last-minute change in plans. And behind it, those two athletes, Rafer Johnson and then the family, Mrs. Ethel Kennedy, holding the hand of young Joseph. Her children behind her. Then Mrs. Stephen Smith. Sergeant Shriver and his wife. So many children. Pausing now, waiting as the body is carefully lifted into the hearse. President Johnson now has moved up beside the family, beside Edward Kennedy and Mrs. Robert Kennedy. But the president is, at this moment, almost, I would say, with some forethought, not intruding into this very sad moment. Standing back, Mrs. Johnson beside him, a half smile on her face as she looks toward all those people she knows so well. Being a cheery woman, tries to cheer them up. And now the flag-draped coffin has been placed in the hearse. And there seems to be a wait of a moment or so as the final adjustments are made to hold it in place. The president is standing slightly to the rear of a Coast Guard member of this ceremonial honor guard.